One.
Hello, Rams fans. Welcome to the season ticket holder video chat alongside head coach Jeff Fisher and GM Les Snead. I'm Steve Savard. Delighted to have you with us. Guys, how are you?
We're good. Thank you.
Real good.
We've asked the season ticket holders to send in their best questions for you heading into 2013. You guys ready for this?
Yes, we are.
A little interaction with your fans?
Good. Very good. It'll
be fun. All right.
Let's get right to it. You guys want some questions answered. Let's start with Kurt Simonson, a season ticket holder in section 132, row O, seat 2. And this is for first for Jeff. Coach, you've changed the face of the franchise at all levels. The organization is functioning at the highest level he's seen. The offense, defense, and special teams have shown they can play with anyone in the league. What do you see now as the next challenge for the coaching staff, the team, and this organization?
Well, we're gonna take this step by step. I think our biggest challenge as we speak, is to get through the preseason game tomorrow night, to get down to our final roster. Les and his staff's going to monitor who's out there, how can we upgrade to the bottom part of our roster, and then prepare our club to get ready for our home opener. That's where our focus is right now. It's all about getting ready for the Cardinals.
Les, you certainly can chime in here. What do you see as the next challenge for the organization?
Your coach hit it on the head. It's a process, and the best way to tackle a process is what's the next step, and that is, like he mentioned, get through this game, finalize the roster, prepare for game one, then you move to game two. But I think that's the best way in anything you do in life. If you have a goal to accomplish, it's a step-by-step process, and he mentioned what the next step is.
Yeah, Jeff, you guys took such a big step forward last year. You went 4-1-1 in the division, and I know you want to look ahead and not look back, but do you think that impacts your football team as far as having confidence playing with the elite teams in the NFL, given how good the NFC West is?
Well, I think, the guys that were on the roster, that are on the roster right now, that were here before we got here, I think it's a big step for them. But you have to be careful from this standpoint. You just can't escrow success from last year and draw upon it and just expect to go out. You have to do things all over again. And that's been our focus throughout the offseason, is improve upon what we've done last year, get better players, improve the ones we have, and go out and set your expectations a little bit higher.
All right, let's take a question from Diane Jarvis, a season ticket holder, and both you guys can answer this, I'm sure. What are your expectations for the team? The fact that it's such a young team, when facing teams with older, more experienced players who've been playing together for a while, what are your expectations, Les? I mean, you've assembled this football team. It's a very young football team.
Key is young. The only way to, I guess you would say, not be young is get experience. And we've all said when you to get experience, you got to play, and you got to go on stage, and you're going to make some mistakes in that. But here's what. As you saw last year, we've got a heck of a division. Jeff, his coaching staff, his veterans, unbelievable job. You don't understand how hard it is to take the youngest team in football and go compete with a team that played in the Super Bowl. They do a great job of putting those guys in positions to have a chance that day to win. And the big picture, though, is for us to become experienced, we got to get experienced. There'll be certain level of patience, certain level of mistakes we'll make. But Jeff and his staff's done a great job of developing the players, and while developing them, giving them a chance to beat an opponent.
Let me elaborate on his, the term experience. If you take, for example, Alec Ogletree, our first-round pick at linebacker, there's still so many things that he hasn't seen. We can only give them so many looks, so many pictures from our offense. We prepare, but things are going to come up. And once you get to that point where you've seen everything once, then you're more comfortable with what you're doing. And so with that being said, when you see something for the first time that we have not anticipated or not prepared him for because we didn't know it was coming up, there's going to be hesitation. And when there's hesitation, there's typically a mistake. So there's going to be some growing pains with this football team. What we're doing right now is we're identifying the strengths and weaknesses of our team, and we have to, support the weaknesses, try to avoid them if at all costs, and then exploit our strengths. And I think one of our strengths is going to be special teams, and I'm sure we'll address that here down the road. But we're going to have we have one of the premier punters and premier kickers in the National Football League. So we're going to get into close game situations where, you know, we'll be have a chance to win.
But Les, you've been around the league a long time, worked with a lot of different head coaches. Jeff seems to be a little different about his attitude about playing young guys. I mean, he talked about the special teams. Last year alone, Jeff, you opened the season with a rookie kicker and a rookie punter. A lot of veteran head coaches would shy away from that. Les, he didn't even bat an eye about that. What does that tell you about your head coach?
I think we're talking about experience here. He's however many years of a head coach, probably more years head coach than I've been in the league. But the interesting thing, and I'll go to something more specific like special teams, is I've been around new head coaches, and maybe they just came from one side of the ball, and they're a coordinator on one side of the ball, and they're so focused on their first job, and, hey, they used to run the offense or the defense, now I'm doing that here. As Jeff, when you get an experienced head coach, he's a head coach, and he knows that, hey, we can actually win a game with special teams. And it's not that any head coach doesn't think that's an important part of the game, but he actually goes, all right, identifies, like I said, some strengths of it, and let's attack the other special teams and use it as a strength. Bat and I think we did talk about it once last year, that there was probably going to be a shank somewhere along the way with a rookie punter or kicker, and you got to probably make the decision early on that, you know what, it's going to come at a bad time, and I think ours came at San Fran.
Yeah, it did, and you know, and fortunately, however you look at it, we didn't lose the game because of it, mm-hmm. but we had a chance to win the game because of it, and that was an overtime when, you know, we let the play clock run out on the field goal. It was good, and we had to re-kick, and then we missed the field goal. But, you know, they learned from that. That'll never happen again, you know, and they came back the next time we played San Francisco, and he put it through the uprights, and we walked off the field. High-fiving our kicker.
Remember.
Yeah.
It was a nice scene. Let's repeat it a bunch of times this year. You guys will open the home. You open the regular season at home against the Arizona Cardinals. Now you're looking for a great home field advantage, which I'm sure you'll get. Ruth Rangel, who's a season ticket holder in Section 413, Row EE, seats 13 and 14, wants to ask you guys about the fans and their roles. Assuming fans have a role in the Rams' success, what fan behaviors are most important? What can you identify there?
Well, I mean, you know, we can talk about the obvious. It's the creating an environment where the opposing offense has a difficult time communicating. That's the most important thing for us, because it creates, especially with our pass rush, it creates problems for offensive linemen. It creates false starts after false starts after false starts, and then there's communication problems. So that's the thing that's most important to us, and that's the thing that I was most impressed with last year is we got that. We got the support. You know, we led the league in sacks, and a good part of the sacks that we got last year came here at home. So from the standpoint of, I know it's hard on you on Mondays, you know, because you're hoarse and you got to go to the office and talk, but the more noise we can make when the opposing offense is on the field, the better. And then, you know, just our fan base has so much to do with momentum, mm-hmm. and perpetuating momentum during the game. We got a big play and they get excited, and then there's another big play on defense. It's just, you know, it makes it a difficult place to play here for our opponents.
Liz, what were your impressions your first year in the Edward Jones Dome, week in and week out?
I think for a team that you didn't know what the expectations were, mm-hmm. I think obviously as we built some momentum and had some successes, the fans, it was a tough place to play. I mean, that you remember that Thursday night, and that was you know, the Cardinals and their quarterback, and I don't know if he's still struggling from that game, but it was because of the noise that led, you know, the sacks. But I think, as Coach said, you always need a plan. I'd love for our fan base to continue that enthusiasm and help this team, help Jeff, help us be, you know, a number one third down defense, because I think Jeff will tell you, if we're number one in third downs on that side of the ball, we're going to have a good chance to win that game.
Yeah, you control games by, by winning the third down battle. And just in general terms, we, you know, our players want it to feel special for them when they walk out there, because this is our home, and we want to create a situation where this is a very, very difficult place to play. for teams that come in here week after week.
Is it difficult? You referenced how tough it can be for an offense and for a quarterback and false starts, but is it even difficult when you're in an environment like that for the head coaches, the coaches, to be able to communicate to one another?
No, not necessarily. You know, it doesn't affect the staff. You know, the other side, keep in mind, you know, who's on the field when the opposing offense is on the field. That's our defense. And so, you know, we have to educate our defense. Our defense will take noise over no noise, but our defense also has to learn to communicate, you know, when the temperature really increases inside the dome.
All right, Jack Berry is a season ticket holder, section 123, seat, row A, seat 2. Here's his question. What's the plan to improve production of the running game and address depth on the offensive line?
Well, we feel right now that our offensive line has got excellent depth. We'll probably carry into the final roster one, two, maybe three more than you ordinarily keep, particularly because we've got depth and we're planning for the future. So, you know, Les's guys have done a great job with that. So we feel good there. The run game, this is our sense for where the run game is right now. With the additional players that we've added to our offense, with Jared Cook and with Tavon Austin, we've got to get them involved and create mismatches. And so if we create the mismatches and get them involved offensively, that's only going to create more opportunities for our run game. Now, if they're not productive, we can't run it. If they're productive, we'll be able to run it. Now, we also need to get back to that, you know, hey, we're going to run the football on first down. You know it. Everybody here knows it. And we're going to pick up 5 or 6 yards. So that's something that I think will start to come together and take shape over the next 10 days.
You interested to see, as the guy that puts this roster together along with Jeff, how the running back situation shakes out, who emerges, who makes a contribution, those kinds of things?
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely an interest there. I think we've got a nice sense of where it's heading. And with all our backs, I think we've said it from the beginning, I think, you know, for the majority, you know, they're going to all contribute. They're all different flavors. And so, as Jeff can tell you, for defense or opposing defense, when you got some different flavors to have to stop, it's not just you're seeing the same type of back and this is what we're going to do to stop this particular person, because all of a sudden now a north-south guy comes in, a shorter guy comes in, a faster guy. So I think that's what our backfield can do to opponents.
Bradley Morrison has a question. He is in section 406. Row double X, seat 20, and probably address the Les first here. How do you decide which colleges you're going to recruit from? Do you look at team needs by position, the player's talent, and in parentheses, natural ability, how he fits schemes, learning ability, and which is most important, or is it a mix of all those things?
I think at the end of the day, when you put your schedule together, he hit the nail on the head. That's the algorithm there. That, hey, where are we drafting at? And we've had two number ones. This will be the second straight year. So when you got two number ones, pretty much the entire first round's in play, depending on whether you go up, down, backwards, or sideways. And a lot of it's going to come to, hey, go to the first round talent and go to schools that have more depth than others, and also what maybe or maybe you're not going to pick. So he hit the algorithm. I don't know if I've figured it out yet, because it can get confusing.
How much can a personal workout, for either one of you guys, how much can a personal workout alter an opinion? Let's say you've watched 5 or 6 games on tape and you've drawn most of your conclusions from that and doing your research on the young man, but then you go to a workout. We are told that you were just absolutely blown away, for example, when you went and watched Tavon Austin work out in the spring. Okay, so how much, and in that case, he was already on the radar, but in other cases, how much can that change and influence your opinion on a player and how he fits into your scheme?
Jeff, you want?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, you know, attending a private workout is one thing, but to be able to do what we've done the last couple of years and go out and compare 3 or 4 or 5 private workouts consecutively within the same position, that really clears things up for
Does
you.
It?
So, and that's something we're fortunate to have been able to do.
You can compare and contrast by position.
I think this is Jeff. You start hey, when these guys play as heck sophomores, you'll watch that film all the way up to whenever their last game is. You'll go through the combine, the all-star processes, all of that, interviews. Then at the end, you're trying to stack your board and, like Jeff said, sort some things out. And when you can go look at, let's just say, one particular position back to back to back, that can be the icing on the cake to go, okay, this guy's one, this guy's 1A, this guy's two, this guy's three.
So you don't want to be surprised by what you see in preseason. You want to be validated, right?
That's
what you want.
That's
Tavon Austin's taken off on a 81-yard punt return at Denver. That's validation for all what you do in the spring.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, with respect to that, you know, we're doing a lot of things outside on the practice field as we get ready for the opener. A lot of those things we're not gonna show in the preseason. And, you know, there's arguments for and against it. But I think that, you know, with the talent level that, in particular, that Tavon has, he's not going to have any difficulty doing something, not for the first time in the offense, but for the first time in a game.
Before I get off the subject, go to the next question. Another thing, and Jeff, you and I talked about it last week, unless you got such tremendous mileage out of your draft class last year, for example, but you also found the diamonds in the rough. You had several free agents that weren't drafted that were around part of the year, all the year, contributed. So we all get caught up in, we in the media, the fans, and the high picks and who's drafted where, but it's the other work. It's the entire process, really, that can shape a roster and turn things around.
Good point. It's a 53-man roster. You only have so many top picks on a 53-man roster because you only have so many picks, you know, first-rounders that you got. But I think that's just a nice – when you take the whole process in place and you get a college free agent and you get – you know, the scouts who stand on the table for college free agents pass along to coaches. Everybody starts buying in to a particular strength of the player, and they bring him in and develop him, and maybe he starts out on special teams. As I always tell Jeff, we're backed up. We're at San Fran. I forget what yard line. I know this. We're close to our goal line, and we got college free agent punter throwing to college free agent gunner, who's now a receiver. So I give, you know, that's Jeff's credit there for not being scared.
Not sure what yard line it was, but I'm pretty sure Johnny Hecker was standing in his end zone when
he
took the snap.
Yes, he was in the end zone.
Yeah.
But the big picture is that, hey, this kid, Riley McLeod, who's now stepping in for Darian, who's injured, is the trade on him was, you know what, a guy who loved football, smart, could take it from the board to the field, what usually is called instincts, and somehow through all those intangibles continues to make plays even at this level that he did at Virginia.
Next question from Jim Firkin, season ticket holder in section 415, row B, seats 12 and 13. Jeff, his question, does Coach Fisher possess the versatility to adapt his, and I'm putting this in quotation marks here, ball control, field position, win the turnover battle, coaching style, to a higher risk, wide open offensive weapons philosophy? Can you discuss your offensive philosophy and how it adapts to your personnel?
Well, yes, and I'll go back a few years. In 2002, Steve McNair was the co-MVP with Peyton Manning. And, I mean, through 30, I don't remember what his stats were, but, yeah, we picked it up and we threw it. And we had four or five games where we scored over, you know, 30, 35 points. And so the object is to score points. As you start out with the players that we had last year, as we're developing younger players, the opportunity to score points sometimes is not there. And as we surround our quarterback with better players, we're going to score more points. At the end of the day, you just need to score one more point than your opponent. We would much prefer a 17-point lead going into the last few minutes over trailing. But, you know, we're prepared to win any way we have to week after week after week. You go in, you identify the strengths and weaknesses of your opponents, and in one week you may say, hey, you know what, we're going to have to put 38 on the board to week because these guys they can score at will. Next week, say, you know what, offense, you know, the defense is, I mean, should be able to keep your opponent under, you know, under 10 to 14 points. So let's not turn the football over and manage this game that way. So every week is a challenge, but I think we'll be more equipped as a football team to score more points.
Yeah, win any way you can really was what came into play in the first half at Denver in the preseason. They dominate the stat column. You hold them to 10 points on the road, which you take against anybody, but especially against Peyton Manning. And also, how exciting was it to see you guys score so quickly? The Tavon Austin punt return, the Alec Ogletree strip. I mean, those kinds of things can devastate and stun another football
team. Yeah, I mean, and within that, Steve, you've got a great throw and catch from Sam to Jared Cook.
Right.
On first down. I mean, just a well-timed throw and a great effort. So, you know, you just, you know, you find ways to win. And, you know, the big thing defensively is just don't give up the big plays. Don't give up the home runs. I think we might have been first in the league last year on that defensively, where we just didn't give up the big chunks. And so you make teams drive the football like Peyton did. And, you know, with respect to Peyton, when you hold Peyton Manning to a field goal, that's a win for your defense.
And judging by how frustrated he was at halftime, yeah, that's definitely a win for you guys. Do you have, in simple terms, do you think you have a philosophy about offense or defense, or is it just, as you said, it's win any way you can?
Well, it's, you know, you want to put 22 smart, tough, mean, nasty players on the field that will play for four quarters, that are not intimidated by anybody, that don't watch the scoreboard, don't care about it. They just want to go out there and play hard. That's the philosophy. And then if you start there, then you can adjust your game plans weekly based on opponents.
All right, what we're talking about, I think, leads perfectly into this next question from season ticket holder Mark Elliott, section 111, seats 11 and 12. Thank you for your question, Mark. With all the new receiving power you have this year, what would your ideal game split be on runs versus passes?
Well,
I guess you may not have an ideal one here.
Yeah, I mean, what you look for from a perfect world is probably 60-40 runs versus passes, because if that's the case, then what you're doing is you're staying out of your second longs, which sometimes lead to third longs, which are hard to convert. So, you know, teams like to say, oh, we want balance, but, you know, sometimes you just can't, you can't get there. But in the perfect world, you're handing the ball off 60% of the time. And while you're doing that, guess what? Your defense is on the sideline resting. And when they're rested, they come in. It's easier for them to get on and off the field.
Do you guys both buy into the philosophy third down success is tied into your first down success?
If you look at what's happened to us in the preseason, I mean, it speaks for itself. You know, one of the things that we have to do is, and it's imperative that we reduce the number of penalties per game. They're up. We're not satisfied with it. The team understands that. But when you create a first and 15, it's difficult to convert on third down. And so from that standpoint, yes. Third down, our third down efficiency has not been acceptable this preseason. Now, keep in mind, we haven't done a lot, but still we've created a lot of third and longs, and they're hard to manage.
You talked about penalties. You just talked about having 22 aggressive, mean, nasty guys. How do you walk that line? How do you tell your team these amount of penalties are not acceptable, yet not coach the aggressiveness out of guys that you brought in for that very reason?
You know, it's not necessarily the amount of penalties. It's the type of penalties. And we're struggling right now with penalties that have nothing to do with the play. Those that take place between the snap and the whistle. Okay, or outside of the snap and the whistle. So it's the false starts. It's the defensive offsides. It's the two unsportsmanlike conduct or unnecessary roughness penalties we had from younger players,
right,
mind you. But those types of penalties get you beat. Now, you're going to have your holds, and you're going to have your incidental face masks and your DPIs and things like that. Those are part of the game. You don't like them. Sometimes they're incorrect, but it's the ones that you can control. The false starts, the defensive offsides, the ones that don't have anything to do with the play are the ones that you have to eliminate. You eliminate that, then you got a chance. I give you an example. 2011, the Oakland Raiders set the record for number of accepted penalties in the National Football League over a 16-game season, and it was 163. And they were 8-8. So that's 10 penalties per game. We'll pretty much guarantee you 8-8. We have higher expectations from this football team than that.
Les, is that something you look at in the players' background, is how disciplined they are in the football field, the type of penalty, if they do take penalties, the type of penalties they have incurred, they've taken?
I think the answer, and I don't know what percentage it would be, but the answer would be yes. And let's just take a guy who consistently may draw unsportsmanlike penalties. If that's a consistent basis, you need to know that coming in. Maybe a DB who consistently maybe gets DPIs with the ball down the field in college. Maybe that's a evidence that he might not be able to play the ball in the air and panic a little bit and do that. So I think you do that. That can be rare occasions when you're talking about some of the top players in the draft, but you're definitely aware of it.
All right, some of our fans, guys, want to talk about some of the players you brought in specifically. Michael Miller, who has his tickets in section 138, seats 15 and 16, wanted to talk about Jared Cook. He seems to move very quickly for a man his size. My question is, does he figure to be a big part of the offense? Why do you think he's not had a breakout year yet in his career? And you had him for three seasons in Tennessee, right? His first three seasons.
Yes, we did. And he was young coming out. And, with respect to what we were doing, we didn't have the production at the quarterback position that you would have liked to be able to get the ball to the tight end. So, we don't have that issue here, so we'd expect, Cookie to be very productive.
Yeah. Sometimes your numbers are tied to the circumstances you're in, and you can point to a number of positions. We most often talk about that in terms of quarterback play, but it can be just the reverse, right? Unless you've seen it.
Well, I think the great example for Cookie is all of us working together. Is you have a tight end who is going to be a guy that tilts toward making the plays in the passing game. So your offensive staff, Jeff and his offensive staff, has got to say, we'll take this type of player. This is his flavor, and we're going to use him versus, we're not going to use him. And that's okay, because there's a lot of ways to skin a cat and score points in this league. But he's a certain type of player, good at what he did, and our guys say, we can put him in this scheme and make him successful.
All right, we'll wrap this up. Let me get a couple quick thoughts from you guys about you've been at this from the moment the season ended last year. I'm sure it was going through your mind on the flight home from Seattle. It's a long off season. You worked very hard to put this football team together. How excited are you to see it come together in the opener against the Arizona Cardinals?
Well, and that's what you work for. That's the first goal. That's the immediate goal of training camp is the opener. And you focus all your attention on that. Now, you can't, if things don't go the way you want them to, there's still a lot of games left. But you build your team and focus on improving your football team with the thought that you're going to be your best when the season starts. So we're very excited about it. We've got some work to do. We've got to get through this preseason game, as we said at the top. We've got roster decisions to make, and then we've got to have a great week of practice. And we're looking forward to getting out there once again in front of our fans.
I think Coach said it. I mean, I think he alluded to something great. I think, hey, let's go up until 2011. We last year was 12, our first year together. I mean, it was a tough five-year stretch for this franchise. A lot of the players that were on that 11 team aren't in the league anymore. That number's been printed, could be in the 20s. We're a young team. We're getting better, but as Coach said, it's a long season. That's why you take it step by step. We're gonna go through some growing pains, and guess what? You can be successful with growing pains, but the key I ask is hey, the momentum's building. Be patient, and it's a 16-game season. We'll take it step by step, and the big thing is, Hey, we open up against Arizona. That game will be over. Do we get better against Atlanta? That game's over. Do we get better against the next opponent and so on? And then I think if you do that, like Coach said, these 16 plus the next 32 to 48 games will be fun to watch around here.
Guys, thanks. Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
For Jeff Fisher, Les Snead, I'm Steve Savard. Thank you, Rams fans. We'll see you and hear you for the opener against the Arizona Cardinals.